I'd like to welcome to Native Solidarity News Ine Yang Slaughter of IPOLA, the Institute for the Preservation of the Original Languages of the Americas. This is a chance for us to talk about language again on the show. Some of you might have heard the program that we did with Namaka Okalani Rollins of the Punani Leo schools in Hawaii, and that was part of a new feature that we're starting on language programs. And what we're hoping to do with this program is really understand the importance of language to cultural survival, and also the really severe threat to that survival and to the languages that are happening right now. So first of all, I'd like to welcome Ine to the program.
Thank you, Adam. I'm so honored to be asked to be on your program.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out, time zone problems and all. So first of all, do you want to introduce yourself and IPOLA?
Certainly. IPOLA, as you might have mentioned, stands for the Institute for the Preservation of the Original Languages of the Americas. I am the executive director of this nonprofit organization, which is headquartered in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in the United States. We've been founded back in September 1992 as a response to a realization that many of the Native American languages are disappearing very, very rapidly. And furthermore, much to the surprise of our founder, she found out that in many of the government schools on the reservations, their native languages were not allowed to be taught because it was not recognized as a language that can be taught as a second language. So it was one of those awakening moments of, well, how else can this endangerment be prevented? And in the beginning phases of the organization as it developed, we found that many communities, the tribal communities, were at that time slowly beginning to realize and trying to do something about it. In the 5 years of in the first 5 years of the organization, we saw a tremendous increase in that community grassroots initiatives. So currently, IPOLA's mission is to answer to the requests of many of these tribal communities, language people who are saying, you know, we are all working very, very hard to establish certain programs that work, but we don't know who's doing what is successful, what has not worked, so that we don't reinvent wheels or come up with solutions that are obviously not going to work. So we came together as a group at a conference which IPOLA organized in March 1997 in Santa Fe. At that conference, we collectively resolved that we need a national resource and information center, and that is what IPOLA is serving to do or to become. And currently our main focus is to connect people with information, with other people, and it's sometimes not just information, but just pure encouragement, speaking to each other and saying, oh gosh, we do have the same problems. Well, we've done this, you're doing well. That type of networking has proven to be necessary and very, very effective in continuing the grassroots movement.
Can you talk about, I guess, the starting point and then how we got to this point, which is the place of language in First Nations? I mean, how that is indissociable from any culture, really. And then about to talk about how it got to the point that there are so few people speaking the languages, the government residential school programs and so on.
To quote our honorary board member, Chief Orrin Lyons of the Onondaga Nation, he calls language as the soul of a nation. And there are many, many people who express it in different ways, but basically that is what it is. And when another gentleman from the Arapaho Nation expressed it in a different way, which was that you see the surface of the water, and culture is something that's not just the surface of the water, but what goes underneath it, all the life and all of the movement of the water that's beneath the surface. When language disappears, that life in the water is gone, and all you see is the surface. And in terms of more like real life situations, a community without a vital language or a living language of their ancestors has basically, I shouldn't say lost, but they have lost contact with the traditional wisdoms and the traditional ways in which they understand history and the worldview and who they are and their, you know, our role in this planet as people, and which the language embodies. So it has been one of the main causes, shall we call it, for a lot of community problems or disintegration. And frankly, if you look at a tribal community where the young people do not speak the language anymore, which is the measure of endangerment, then they can no longer communicate with their grandparents. And this is the phenomenon that we see in the majority of cases. So we consider a language to be endangered when the children no longer speak, and we're one generation away from losing it.
Now, it seems to me that this loss of language is, although perhaps in recent times, kind of an issue of neglect, and it was basically coming from government policy in the U.S. as in Canada to basically dismantle native cultures by, for example, taking kids away and putting them in residential schools where language was forbidden, and also setting up a pattern where kids are no longer living in the land of their parents or their grandparents, and so are not able to learn the language in other ways. Wondering, now it seems there is all of a sudden some sensitivity for this issue. I'm wondering what's changed. I mean, is the government funding now native language programs, or is it an initiative from people who have realized what is about to be lost, or how do you see it?
Yes, that's a very good question. There's very, very, there's several ways in addressing this. First of all, there is absolutely no question about why we are in a state in this dire state as we are today. It was a very calculated and a fairly successful government policy. To quote a Cochiti Pueblo teacher that I recently had a workshop with, and this was a workshop for young children, she was addressing this issue of language loss from a historical point of view. And yes, there were European contact and the assimilation and elimination. And then now, however, this generation of young children are in a self-determination period of Indian history. Therefore, she does not want to emphasize so much on blaming why it happened, but she would rather see the young people say, you know, it is disappearing, and we have to take responsibility for it. And this is all part of the self-determination generation. And rather than say, oh, it was taken away from us, the verbiage that rings or equates to self-identity and wanting to do something about it is, we are losing it, and we have to do something about it. So the movement, so to speak, I don't believe that governments come up with brand new ideas. You know, I think they respond to numbers. So my belief is that all of this actually did begin at the grassroots level. It took a lot of sacrifice and commitment from individuals who they even had to fight their own internal pressures to be in this kind of struggle. But it took generations, and maybe we're talking 10, 20 years of hard work on these almost unknown individuals who've paved the way for this current generation to say, we want this back. So from that point of view, I would say definitely there's a demand that's arisen from the grassroots. But also, in response to those grassroots voices, several important institutions have developed. And IPOLA is basically a new kid on the block. There is a organization called American Indian Language Development Institute, which is about 15 years old. And you've spoken to Punana Leo. They've started as almost an underground movement. It was considered almost illegal to teach Hawaiian to the children. But they started 15, 17 years ago. So we have seen this. Now, in terms of government support in the United States, I believe it was in 1992, I believe that's the correct year, that they have issued an administrative for Native Americans, which is funding for language preservation for Native Americans in the United States. So there is a response to this call, and the response from the government level is in the way of funding. It is not a lot. It is by fairly competitive. It is by selection, and each year, I believe, $2 million is divvied up into planning grants and then implementation grants. But as you know, we have over 500 communities all applying for that if they have a language program.
Those young people taking pride in the language and passing it on and bringing it into contemporary life, that Ine Slaughter of the Institute for the Preservation of Original Languages of the Americas is talking about. I hope you heard Sharon Birch's interview and all her great music on this show a few weeks ago, Native Salty News, the Dine singer, and I hope you enjoy the beautiful language of the Dine people. We're going to go back to our chat with Ine Slaughter and look at some of the successful Native immersion, Native language immersion programs that are happening all around. Thanks for being with us for this special edition of Native Solidarity News. What are some of the grassroots initiatives that over the past years have been giving rise to this rebirth in Native language teaching and also honor, I guess, for the culture and for the language?
There is a lot, and you know, there are a few that are very, very visible, such as the Hawaiian program, and of course they have 10, 15 years of history behind them. In terms of more quiet but very consistent community efforts, I will quote maybe, there's one locally in Santa Fe area. It's the Cochiti Pueblo. Now, this is a very unique situation where the community has decided that their language will never be written down. So they have no texts, there is a linguistic form of writing the language, but they will not use it. And the way they're teaching is through total immersion. They start at preschool all the way up to whoever wishes to learn, and I think they even have classes for adults. But it is through oral method in an immersion situation. Now, I need to clarify immersion here because there is the model where you have immersion from 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock. It's an all-day. In many communities, that is not possible. There's a lack of human resources, intellectual resources, and just pure resources. And so the way we define and the way many language people define immersion is even if it's for, you know, 1 hour a day, that period of learning that language almost in a sacred way. It is a time where you do not speak any other language but the language that you are trying to teach and learn. So we define immersion in that way. So Cochiti is doing something very, very, I would consider, brave, because so often there is a lot of speculation that if you do not write the language down, it will disappear eventually. Another totally opposite model, which is gaining tremendous momentum, is in the Hopi Nation. For many years, they have accepted the form, the written form of their language, and now they are promoting the reading and writing, therefore literacy of the language, as one of the most important things to teach. And so there is a sort of almost a tribal endorsement on that method, and it's proving to be extremely effective. So each community chooses for oneself what they feel they need to do to preserve the language. And depending on what you choose, there are certain success models and certain models that have not worked. So this is the area where Ipola likes to be consulted in terms of, well, if you do decide to do it the Cochiti Pueblo way, let us make sure that all these other components are in place.
Now, what are what would you say are the kind of the conditions that are needed to make this a kind of a broader movement, whether on reservations or especially in the cities? I mean, first of all, is this even something that you're getting a lot of people saying that they want this to happen?
Right, right. And the city folks, we shouldn't forget, On a more broad base, we believe that the communities need more awareness. The tribal communities themselves need more awareness. That's what the language people in the communities have expressed to us, that oftentimes their own people are not even aware of the fact that the language is disappearing. It is that subtle. You know, we almost compare it to sort of a disease that you cannot see that's happening, but it's all happening internally. And so the awareness campaign is something that needs to occur within tribal communities. Also, most of the support in terms of financial support comes from foundations and private contributions for those who believe in this cause. We need a lot more public awareness, meaning a community at large. So I believe that if there is there are ways in which we can reach out to the public at large, that's an effort that is much needed. And I can't remember what your last question was, but it all relates to, I believe, the awareness issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was also asking about the
cities. Oh,
yeah.
We forgot. Well, here's an example of how the urban, you know, folks are really desperate to teach their children and even themselves. There's a lack of materials. If you go to any bookstore or any place of a resource that might even carry language tapes, they do not include the Native American languages. Obvious ones, Cherokee or Navajo, those that have had teaching materials that were used for their own people and their tribal council have approved that they be available to the outside world, they might be available. But it's really, truly a lack of materials that seem to deter, you know, this desire to learn or to teach. Plus, a very simple fact that because it is a minority language in this more dominant society, there's very little opportunity to hear or speak the language. So there needs to be some form of, whether it be a radio program or more tapes available or even videos available, to increase the critical mass of material that is in that language. And this is an area that actually Ebola is investigating. One of our board members is really, really interested in this issue of increasing the critical mass of materials available in our languages. And even if it means dubbing a film into a native language, why can't we do that? And there are many, many innovative ways in which perhaps we can try to create some of this material without starting at scratch. So there are many discussions at this point about what to do to reach as many people who are not in the reservations and their own communities to be able to learn this. And I know that, for example, let me remember if it's Comanche or... Anyway, one of the languages in Oklahoma, they have a long-distance satellite learning. So that more and more of that is going to be feasible.
Hmm. And that's a good way to get materials to more remote communities.
Right,
Oh, Rashua, 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 Rashua
There's a really, really interesting point you brought up, a really essential point about the whole business of written and oral language and how losing language means that knowledge and the sense of self and sense of community is lost from one generation to the next. I'd like to, talk a little bit more about the whole issue of transliteration of native languages. You've mentioned some people see it as a useful tool. Other people are more into the oral approach, which perhaps, I mean, even, you know, it's not just native languages, but a lot of languages that where people now function so much in the written word were oral, and that had different implications. You know, people who were writers or poets or whatever would have to know their stuff by heart, you know, and it was it brings a whole different culture, you know, of memory, storytelling. You know, you think of African griots or whatever. So maybe the way I could put the question is to talk about how the shift to written language affects culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point. Well, there's two things that come to mind. First of all, the written forms are in phonetic form using the alphabet in many cases. And, of course, there are certain diacritical marks and certain marks that are not part of the alphabet that are created to represent sounds. So the first obstacle, if I can call it that, in relearning one's language through the written form is you have to know how to pronounce all these strange marks. The familiarity of the alphabet helps rather than to create a whole new alphabet and then, first of all, we don't have the luxury of time to do that. But in any case, so oftentimes that is a tedious process. It is a and frankly, a very difficult process, even if you're linguistically inclined. And the other part that comes to mind is, well, if you are learning any second language, the best way to learn, if you're interested in the speaking part of it, is to do it in an oral way. In other words, you go into a conversation class. To learn to be literate, to read and write, is one exercise. But the real test of how fluent you are in a language is how well you speak it. So the conversation in that language and that kind of teaching method, I believe, for the kind of thing we're trying to do, is really more important. And the writing it down and having dictionaries and having texts are a guide. It's a tool that helps the end purpose of becoming fluent speakers. So I'm not opposed to reading and writing, but you cannot learn a language to learn to speak a language by starting there. That should just be the extra and very important tools. And I find that many people... Well, let's put it this way. People's learning styles are all different. So I think one has to use every method possible. And those who will enjoy the literacy part, that's what we need. And those who enjoy doing it the other way, that's also what we need.
Mm. Yeah, and through all of this, I guess... For me, more as an outsider's point of view, you know, these are very beautiful languages, and I mean, I don't actually know of that many languages that I wouldn't consider beautiful, just like that many kinds of music that I wouldn't consider beautiful, and to be losing that, what would you say, that diversity,
mm-hmm.
is a real loss for everybody. kind of running low on time, so I wanted to ask you if there's anything that you'd like to talk about that we haven't had time for yet.
Oh, yes. Well, I think the one thing I can speak about is that we really need a lot of help in this work we do. And if there are people that are really, really interested in diversity issues, that are interested in the survival of different cultures, as we become more and more unified in the world, which is a beautiful thing and it's a necessary thing, that puts more emphasis, I believe, on trying to preserve the diversity. So I would just love to see more and more of like-minded people to bring together their forces and make sure that our people and our voices and our languages and our cultures all survive this movement towards unification. And again, which is an important thing, but without sacrificing diversity.
If people would like to get in touch with Ipola, they can call in Santa Fe, 505-820-0311. I'd like to thank Ine Yang Slaughter a lot for taking a good half hour to share this. And we'll have to stay in touch as we try and do with everybody.
Yes. Thank you, Adam, very much for the opportunity. And yeah, let's keep in touch because our program will develop and change, and I'd love to keep you up to date.
And that was our feature for tonight's show of Native Solidarity News. Hope you enjoyed this chat. As we said at the beginning of the show, language is one of the fundamental issues, and a lot of good stories that Ine has been telling. Again, the phone number for the Institute for the Preservation of the Original Languages of the Americas, who have that, as I mentioned, that 100-page resource directory of Native Language Immersion Programs and resource materials is 505-820-0311. The email is ipola@ipola.org. And we heard some bara music from Madagascar before that, and I was going to play something, some Nawa music, but just reading the liner notes, it said that it's now in Arabic, where about 60 years ago it would have been in the native Bambara. So there you go. It's not just the European languages that are colonizing and that are erasing other cultures. Anything needs to have the surface scratched a little more. Hope you got everything you need out of this show, and I'd like to really thank you for being along, and hope you have a good evening, and we'll catch each other next week for a show about another major issue, the Diné people of Big Mountain, one of the last truly self-sufficient cultures of North America, and they are about to be deported, so there is something you can do to stop that. You'll hear about that next week on Native Solidarity News. This is some music from the Basque singer Imanol, hiding away in a sleigh in the Family Stone album here. And yeah, trying to give a sense of all the amazing beauty and cultural strength that is out there. There's a very strong Basque liberation movement now from oppression by Spain and France. So enjoy this album put out by Le Chant du Monde, and have a good week.
Bakez eta lorez aski. Bakezkoritan ez gehiago ari. Eta lorezkoritan ez tare gehiago. Bakezko bertsuez eta lorezko baketaz aski. Bakezkorik ez gehiago konta, eta lorezkorik ez. Ez gehiago kanta mezedez. Borrokaren garaia baita. Orain, borrokarenean. Thank you. naiz poeta. Saskia naiz. Ene poesia zulatua da. Saskian zuloak poesia purra doala zulotikan. Baina poeta nahute zazerua diet nik kantatzen esan bakarrik dagien itzlari nataien. Ikusi ditut anaiak burdina funditzen, itxuturik nago. Nehor ez da fabriketatik bizikletaz etxeratzen. Esan diet kainoirik ez egiteko, gogorturik nago, ez da kustarrazoi nik etxaia hiltzeko. Baina poeta nahute, talorea diet nik kantatzen, esan bakarrik dagie itzlari natzaie. Ikusi ditut anaia gerlaratzen, itxuturik nago, nehor ez da bide zuzendik itzultzen. Esan diet armarik ez hartzeko, gogorturik nago, belarriak lehertu dizkidate bombak ez entzuteko. Baina poeta nahute, tabakea diet nik kantatzen, esan bakarrik dagien itlari nataie. Ikusi ditut gorrotoz joaten, itxuturik nago, ene bertsu baketsu ez zenituen gerlaratzen uzten. Esan nien armarik ez hartzeko, gogorturik nago, kasu eman gabe joan zitzaizkidan guztia iraultzeko. Jadanik poeta ez naute, orain gerla diet nik kantako, egin bakarrik dagie burkide nazaie. Poeta ez naute, orain gerla diet nik kantako, egin bakarrik dagie burkide nazaie. Saskian zuloak poesia purra doala zulotikan.